And then this is our new sign.
This is the original, yeah, and we're using the sign, okay, perfect.
David, the problem.
So after the meeting.
Here is a pen.
Do you hear us, Dave? You have 4 minutes.
Does anyone else, do you have an agenda?
Sure, we have one. I actually have my iPad.
Put your tie on.
And here is a check.
Put a tie. Bruce, is it, did I put a tie on?
No, I'm being facetious.
You can hear me okay?
Pretty fine.
Good. You,
yes.
You as well. Everybody staying,
Yeah, everybody's safe here. We're trying to run a startup though with obeying all the rules and people, you know, taking it there and doing all this stuff. It's kind of a pain.
No kidding.
Okay, thank you.
It's always nice to have new challenges, right?
I think it is, yeah. We just got approved by the FDA on a new ventilator. It's exciting.
Right, we saw that on the front page of the Plain Dealer, Dan.
Is it on the front page of the Plain? I didn't realize the Plain Dealer existed.
A new what?
Yes.
A new what?
The ventilator.
Ah, wow.
Retooled. Yeah, that's congratulations.
Nice. Dan, can you hear me?
Thank you. I wonder if we can sell them now. That's the question. The hospital admissions are nowhere near what they thought they were going to be. So it's going to be a bit of a, Ohio's doing extremely well.
And to imagine a Republican.
Yeah.
I said the same thing to him. I'm like, you're coordinating with Republicans. Right?
Hopefully we can look back on this reign of infantile paralysis.
You want to
it's okay. Everything is
right.
Yeah.
Debbie's going under.
I'm here.
Yeah, I know you're there, but you're just two initials.
Oh, that's not me. Or I don't know what I did.
We have a couple minutes yet. Who's doing the roll call?
Me.
Karen.
I'm here.
Wow. No, Karen is going to do it.
Very spooky.
It is.
Karen is all queued up.
I'm ready to go.
Okay, give us one more minute, I think.
Okay.
Commissioner Rick is going to lay the hammer down at 10 o'clock, whether we're ready or not.
Public meeting. We put out notice.
Yes, the change of location was posted at least 72 hours in advance that we moved to a virtual environment. So we've met our requirements.
So we're both virtual and virtuous. Well, good morning, everybody. And welcome to our virtual meeting. This is going to be a bit of a first, and hope that everyone is staying safe and comfortable on this fine winter day in the middle of April. We need a roll call, please.
Bruce Rinker? Debbie Berry.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
And if you join us in the pledge to the flag, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which it stands, one nation,
under
God, indivisible, liberty and
justice for all.
For all.
We would not make a good a cappella choir.
That was.
So next on our agenda, we have, I need a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting of March 18th, subject to any amendment.
So moved.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
And now our financial report. Bill?
Thank you, Commissioner Meeker. David, if you're listening, I still do not have a share screen button available. Share content, it's grayed out.
That should be active now, Bill.
It is not.
Well, there's
Debbie. Okay, there it goes. Thank you.
Yeah.
There you go. Thank you for everyone's patience with that. These are the financial results through the end of first quarter, so March 31st. And what we're going to see throughout this is we have not been too dramatically affected until about the last 2 weeks of March, given we had some normalcy in January and February, and really the main effect of COVID-19 starts to hit us at the tail end of the first quarter. So what we're seeing here is, because of the fact that we're ahead on property tax collections, we are ahead overall from a revenue perspective of about $678,000. You can see the shortfall already in charges for services of $200,000. That is going to grow, obviously, as we get into the busier time of the season. And we'll talk about what this all means, and we'll talk about our expectations for property taxes as we get into this discussion a little bit. But from a high-level perspective, you can see here as we scroll through where the numbers are coming out, we're at about 45 million in revenue, almost 45.1. And then we have contractual services with a little bit more spend than last year, which again, as we knew about this and we talked about it last meeting, a lot of this is driven by updating our software licenses with multi-year agreements. You can see here where some of the operational expenses are being constricted. We have taken away any non-essential spend, and we are on essential spend only. So we're about $357,000 less in operations expenses than we were last year for a combination of reasons. And what this does is it puts us in an operating surplus position that's about $648,000 higher than where we were last year. As we go down, you can see that we do have active construction. We're about $1.1 million ahead of where we were last year in construction spend. That planned, we'll keep an eye on that as we go through this period of time. And we had early on land acquisitions. You can see very little land expense for the month of March. This was all prior to January and February. So again, we're looking at all land transactions on a case-by-case basis, monitoring the existing environment that we're in. So from a net perspective, our net surplus is down approximately $252,000 from where we were at this point last year. Jumping over to the zoo, just one thing I'll highlight real fast is we did have a reclassification, you'll see in the Zoo Society line, of $177,000. That went from operating income down to restricted income. So it's not that that income was lost, it was just reclassified. And we had an additional payment in 2019 early on, which is why it looks like the overall Zoo Society revenue is down. Other than that, we're pretty close to where we were at this point last year. One of the benefits that we had in January, February, the first 2 weeks of March was milder and less wet weather this year than last. But we're going to start seeing some of the pain come through for being closed, obviously, in April, and then we'll see what happens as we hear more about May. The amount of revenue at risk for May is approximately $1.3 million for the zoo, and the amount of revenue for April for the zoo is approximately $500,000 if we used last year as a gauge. So that gives you a sense of how this could affect us the longer that COVID-19 restrictions go on. When we look at our operations again, we're running as tightly as we can right now at the zoo. Obviously, animal care and safety are not going to go down, so we continue to make sure All facilities are in good working order and animal environments are appropriate and healthy, but we're still ahead of last year with a little bit less spend in operations of $64,000. We can look at our capital expenditures. We're about $343,000 less in CapEx than we were at this point last year. And that takes us to a position of approximately $105,000 more operating subsidy than we had at the end of first quarter of last year for the zoo. Looking at golf, golf has been off to a terrific start. They're actually up about 93% in terms of number of nine-hole rounds played. That may translate into $105,000 greater income this year than last at the end of the first quarter. Good expense control, even though revenue is up, operating expenses are actually down by about $45,000. So kudos to the golf team for managing high demand, taking advantage of terrific weather so far this year, and driving good cost efficiencies and care of what they're spending. So that puts our operating surplus up about $150,000 from where it was last year. And with the fewer capital projects going on this year for golf, you can see our net subsidy position after CapEx is almost $700,000 better than we were at the end of the first quarter of last year. Jumping over to the individual courses, Little Met and Aptic Woods were closed in the first quarter, and you can see all of our other courses were up in operating revenue and up in operating surplus. So again, weather is highly attributable to this. We've had a very favorable first quarter, as well as active interest from the public with lack of other things to do. And really should have some high accolades for golf as well for managing those crowds, doing it safely, spreading them out, and making sure that we don't have any gatherings. So a great job by the golf team. Jumping over to Enterprise, we are almost $30,000 ahead of where we were last year. You can see the concessions revenue is already down. We lost part of the month of March with Merlin's. We didn't open many of our other facilities yet there, so that number will grow. Our dock rentals and chalet, which is in the other line, are both up. And we look at our total operating expenses, we're almost in line with where we were last year. We're about $11,000 more in operating expenses, but our operating surplus is about $18,000 ahead of where it was last year. And again, I feel caution that this will obviously deteriorate as we look at the April numbers and the fact that we've not been able to keep our doors open or any other concession facilities as we go through. But our dock, rental, and gas revenue, we are expecting to continue, and the chalet has wrapped up its season. So we are approximately $33,000 ahead of last year when we talked about the net surplus for Enterprise. Here's a quick snapshot of what's closed. You'll see it grayed out, and you can see the marina performance we've seen last year for our P55th and Emerald Necklace. We are slightly behind at Wildwood. It's not a huge amount of dollars. Our operating surplus is off. You can see there it's about $9,100 versus $10,800 last year. And then again, our other concession facilities, our base, our Ledge Lake, those are all still closed. We can see that the chalet had a really good first quarter versus first quarter of last year. Operating surplus was up $20,000. And we can see that parking, as expected, with the lack of activity downtown, is down. It's still in a surplus position, but down from last year. So I wanted to take a look at, as we look at this mortgage forbearance plan that is available from the federal government, it's 180-day free pass, if you will, for folks during this period of time if they cannot make the mortgage payment timely. So if we have delinquencies, I wanted to anticipate what that effect would be on our second half property tax collections. Those property tax collections for July and August are roughly scheduled to be about $36 million. So what this graph shows, as you can see by the spike, in 2008, 2009, that was the mortgage crisis that we experienced and the Great Recession that followed. The blue part of this chart, those are the property tax revenues we've experienced on a historical tax basis. And what's really curious to me is back in 2008, 2009, we stayed flat when we had people that went into a 28% delinquency rate on mortgages, and that's what the red line represents. That red line trend line shows the various delinquency rates through each of the years 2005 through 2020. We had a trailing effect on our ability to collect property taxes because, remember, a lot of people pay their property taxes with their mortgage payments. It goes into escrow with property tax and insurance for the home coming out of it. So if they miss their mortgage payments, they miss the property tax payments, and therefore we don't get as much distributed from Cuyahoga County. Hinkley Township. So you can see the decline in 2011, 12, and 13 following the 08, 09 collapse and Great Recession. So if we look at the forecasted delinquency rates for 2020, I see numbers anywhere from 20 to 30% at the expected delinquency rate. I just take the 25% estimate here, and what this is showing is if this follows anything in past history, which is a bit of a just an educated guess at this point, we'll see a trailing effect on our property tax revenue. We'll not see an immediate effect this year. And the likelihood of that, I think, is pretty reasonable, because if you think about when this all went into effect, folks would probably not have been at any greater of a delinquency rate in January, February, and March than any other given year. Really, a lot of the unemployment started to hit hard in April. So we have the first half of the first half, if you will, that should be on track. If we start to see delinquencies, it'll come in more in the middle and second half of the year, which would affect our outlying year. So we're going to continue to keep an eye on that. It's meaningful information for us, and we're watching as closely as we can. Now we talk about the potential impact of COVID-19. So what we've done is we've taken a snapshot in time at three different points of the year, June 30th, September 30th, and December 31st. And the reason for this is we have really no indication at this point how long any kind of stay-at-home order or mass gathering restriction is going to last. So we wanted to see the effect at each of these three respective points in the year. And you can see from a lost revenue perspective, we range from $5.7 million lost in revenue that goes through June 30th estimate to $19 million if it goes through the end of the year. Again, estimate. These estimates, I really want to highlight the fact that we're working with data that changes every single day, and we're running multiple scenarios every single day. So this is a snapshot in time as of yesterday's date. These numbers are subject to change, but it's our best indication right now. We have a number of cost countermeasures in place where we're trying to save dollars going out the door. You can see those listed here, and what we are able to say with a reasonable degree of expectation is we think if stay-at-home and mass gatherings go through June 30th, we can manage that. It's a little bit of pain. Everybody feels a little bit of pain, but we can manage that pretty effectively. We can offset the lost revenue of that. But as you can see, as things continue on throughout the year, that's a much bigger number to offset. We still think we can pull multiple levers to go ahead and manage through that, but it will take a lot of effort. It's restricted spending, which we've already done. It's a hiring freeze, which we've already done. It's only operating at 10% or less of our normal seasonals, which we are doing right now. It's taking a look at staff savings, operational savings, deferrals on capital spending. I mean, it's across the board, and we'll need to combine all those tools. The one other thing that we have reached out, just from a discussion standpoint, is whether or not any credit facilities would be available to us. And our relationship with our bank is quite strong, and they've indicated, if necessary, we would have the ability to put together a $25 million line of credit or a similar one-year short-term note facility at market rates. We have not gone down that path any further than just discussion and conceptual right now, but we wanted to understand capacity and availability in the event that we need it. So this gives a snapshot in time, again, estimate of where we are today, what we're anticipating this will cost us depending on length of time that it lasts, and what we're thinking of doing to countermeasure in the event it goes longer than expected. And if there's a report, if there's any questions, I'm happy to address.
Bill, I had one question relating to the erosion of property tax. Couldn't you think of $1 million in September as being a little on the light side? I would think this thing could be much more severe with respect to people not paying their property taxes.
I think the effect is going to be in late 21 and 22, Commissioner Moore. If we can rely on what happened in 2008 as an indicator, I think we'll get through this next semi-annual payment that's due June 30th without too much disruption. And then our next major influx of capital would be January and February of 2021 from property taxes. So we typically collect January through about August or September because of how we take tax advances from the county. And the heavy lift for the second half will hit in July and August. I don't think those will be tremendously affected. It's the outlying years that we need to keep a close eye on. I've reached out to the county, the budget commissioner's office, to see if we can get any feedback on estimates that they have. They have not responded yet. I'll reach out to them again in about another week. But obviously they're on furlough over there to a large capacity as well, and I don't know how much they're doing to anticipate this, but we're trying to get as much data as we can to support this assumption that it's going to happen in 21 and 22 as opposed to this year.
Bill, I think it would be very handy to go out into 21, even though you don't normally do that. But with these circumstances and the potential of the of an enormous, I mean, not paying your property tax is probably the best way to finance anything. And I would guess you're going to see some, you know, just among households, I would think you'd see at least a 20%. 25% decline in a default rate that's very high, and not default, I should say, but just people postponing paying their taxes.
And there seems to be a lot of forgiveness for that too. So,
but there'll be forgiveness in the near term,
right?
But I what I worry about is not so much the first quarter, but maybe the second quarter of next year. It's nice to kind of lead the duck a little bit and make sure we're doing things now that prepare us for the worst then. I mean, I think one of the key concepts of planning is the less you know, the less sure you are of things, the more you need to plan.
You're absolutely right. We are looking out to subsequent years. We started that process a little bit more about a week and a half ago as we got more data on potential delinquencies. Both Commissioners Berry and Moore, you're both right from the fact that this forbearance program, it's a 6-month forbearance, it's 180 days, but what we're hearing is happening is that gets tacked on towards the end of the mortgage. So if you're on a 15 or a 30 year mortgage, it's going to be basically like a default in our case for a long time until we see that get redistributed out. So we are talking about what measures we can do today that are long term and that we can keep in place to make sure we're trying to hedge against the potential loss of, you know, if we're talking about approximately $77 million in property taxes a year, so to lose 25% of that is a really significant number.
So I would.
I think what we have to be thinking about here is that this is an event that's occurred that has not, it didn't even occur in 29. And 45 was bad, but with 45, there was an enormous demand, a demand that had been built up in 1945 when the war ended. But here, you're going to have people that are really in bad shape. And I worry about, and of course, the park becomes more important when people are in really bad shape.
100% agreement.
Bill, I have a question. Given what you said about talking to our lenders about possibly needing to take a loan or something, do you have a sense of what, given your projections, when you would have to make that call, how far out that is? I'm just curious on timing. You know, obviously we don't know what's going to happen every day, but you're making thoughts of where we might go. When do you think you'd have to get to that point, given what you've seen so far?
What we're doing is we're evaluating. So we have calls amongst the chiefs 3 times a week generally, and individual calls even more frequently than that. And every week we are reevaluating based on new information that we get in. In our minds, our next major rollout of what's coming next from the governor's office will happen between now and the end of the month. Since we have the stay at home until 5-1, if we get a sense that that's lifting to some degree, then we'll probably still just stay in conceptual conversation at this point, depending on what lifting means and what people having the ability to get back to work means. Mm-hmm. If we see an extension of this, we may move forward and create a more formal discussion for which we can bring to the next board meeting for the commissioners in terms of an info item so we can share a little bit more of what that looks like. We can pull that trigger fairly quickly. So as long as we're talking with our bank 3 times a week as well. We have some examples of where this has already happened down in Cincinnati. They did an emergency ordinance, I believe, of a $150 million facility. So the city of Cincinnati did. So we have, and that was the PNC Bank, which is our bank. So there's a comfort level with how that works. And there's a comfort level from their debt committee on how strong we are, especially from the fact that we've never taken out a credit facility of any kind of debt in our past. So we've got some nimbleness in terms of quickness to execute, We just want to make sure we're not doing that too quickly. But you know, there is the old adage that it's better to have it in place when you don't need it as opposed to trying to get it when you do need it. So we're walking that line.
Gotcha. Thank you.
I believe we did back in the 40s. We did borrow just a short term in between. We had three levies, and so there was just one period of time in the history. I don't know the exact dollar values, but we do believe that there was one time in our history.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Bill. We'll hang in there. Next, Brian.
Yes, good morning. The very first action item we have is the swearing in of a patrol officer. Debbie, just be careful of it.
Yes. Keep your distance and raise your right hand.
I, Debbie Sepradin. I, Debbie Sepradin.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution.
That I will support the Constitution.
And laws.
And laws.
Of the United States of America.
The United States of America.
The Constitution and laws.
Constitution and laws.
Of the State of Ohio.
Of the State of Ohio.
And the rules and regulations.
And the rules and regulations.
Of Cleveland Metro Parks.
Of Cleveland Metro Parks.
And I will discharge the duties.
And I will discharge the duties.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
Of the office of officer.
Of the office of officer.
To which I've been appointed.
Which I've been appointed.
I will faithfully carry out.
I will faithfully carry out.
And implement.
And implement.
The policies enunciated.
The policies enunciated.
And the instructions given to me.
And the instructions given to me.
By the Board of Park Commissioners.
By the Board of Park Commissioners.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
This I promise to do as I shall answer unto God.
This I promise to do as I shall answer to God.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So one thing I'm part of.
I'm going to have to do the other.
Let's have him sign this document.
Oh, yeah, this one.
Yeah. And there's.
As we finish the signing of papers, just a quick few notes. David was a special deputy assigned to the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. He had previously worked for the North Randall Police Department. He received his associate's degree in 2017 from Moraine Community College, and he is multilingual, speaking at least six languages. So we welcome him to the police force. The recommended action item, appointing David Zabrin for full-time police officer to the Cleveland Metro Parks, is on the top portion of page 9.
All right, thank you so much. Congratulations.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Congratulations.
The next action item is the 2020 budget adjustment number 3.
Thank you, Ryan. 2020 budget adustment number 3 is for $274,044. $260,000 of this are grants for the Whiskey Island Connector Trail, and $151,000 are grants for Chalet parking lot. The rest are transfers among different accounts. Given that, the recommended action is that the Board of Park Commissioners approve the 2020 budget adjustment number 3 for a total increase of $374,044 as delineated on pages 29 to 30 of the agenda.
So moved.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next action item is the authorization for Cleveland Metro Parks Police Department to enter into an intergovernmental cooperative mutual aid agreement. We have continued. We are now up to more than 12 of these. This is with the City of Westlake, Hinckley Township. We share mutual concerns, and this is just more commemorating our intergovernmental cooperative and mutual aid agreement. The recommended action falls on the mid portion of page 10 to execute the mutual aid agreement.
Move the motion.
Second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is for the Lakefront Reservation. This is the authorization to enter into a cooperative agreement with the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. This is part of the Whiskey Island Trail Connector. This is all part of the Tiger Project that's investing more than $16 million, building more than 4+ miles worth of paved trails and bridges. The agreement with NEORSD is near the Westerly Wastewater Treatment Plant. There is a whole host of tenants to provide in this cooperative arrangement. The sewer district has been fantastic to work with. We found a very cooperative way to be able to build the structure, not only with them, but with our
partners of Norfolk and Southern Railroad and the City of Cleveland. The agreement recommended action falls on the top portion of page 12 to enter into the cooperative arrangement with the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District.
Can I ask one question, Brian? When will the part of that that goes up and over the over that manhole cover along the side of the freeway, when will that part of this project be done, do you project?
Well, technically it actually started already. We've actually cleared all the way through there, and Haynes construction is started. If Sean's on, he could probably give you more of a detail, but there's probably a few months before we'll see any further movement in that section.
Okay, so maybe it won't be done before the summer, will it? Before the end of the summer?
It will have started before we get into summer, and then the completion date is next year.
Okay, got it. Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 The next is the authorization to submit an application to the Department of Transportation to better utilizing investments to leverage development. This is called the Build Grant Program. This is through the Federal Department of Transportation. It's very highly competitive. This was previously known as the Tiger Grant, which we received funding for previously, almost $8 million in the eighth round of it in 2016. This was the Connecting Pathways. This build application cycle will fund at least $15 million of the $1 billion of available projects. Cleveland Metro Parks continues to work with our partners at the City of Cleveland, Cuyahoga County Planning, Cuyahoga County Department of Public Works, and our friends at NOACA to develop a build planning grant application to advance several of our regionally significant projects between trails and bikeways. We have a whole list of them. This is kind of a wider swath to see how all of them will kind of score out. We needed authorization from our board to be able to put these projects in play, again, for the planning side of this, for the build grant. There is a minimum of 20% local match, but this was really trying to get ahead of the curve if these funds do become available and we do have a competitive application. So recommended action to be able to follow through on the middle of these falls in the bottom portion of page 13.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Who gets paid to come up with these acronyms?
Yeah, there's a lot of them in this agenda today. The wastewater treatment plant, Westerly. The next action item we have is the award of RFQ 6492 Cleveland Harbor Eastern Embayment Resiliency Study. This is the best one. Cheers. This is for the lakefront reservation. This is again with project partners of the City of Cleveland, Ohio Department of Natural Resources, Ohio Department of Transportation, and the Port of Cleveland are all embarking on this CHEERS study. The team has vetted a host of different design service companies. They have come to the conclusion that WRT with Great Ecology and KS Associates, based on all of their evaluation from technical understanding, concept development, preliminary design, collaboration, and project documents, they are recommending WRT. We do have a history with WRT back in the early portions of 10, 11, and 12. We partnered with WRT, Wallace, Rogers, and Todd, to actually do our strategic plan. So they are a known commodity. KS has done a number of different jobs with us relative to our lakefront. We feel very comfortable the team vetted, and we are looking forward to the recommended action to approve. This is the most qualified team for the CHEERS Professional Design Services. The recommended action falls on the top portion of page 16.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We have award of bid. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 17 for various zoo grains, 6421 and RFP 6488, Cleveland Metro Parks Invasive Plant Control Program. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 17.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Vouchers and payroll.
Yeah.
The following vouchers totaling $7,193,278.43 have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure in conformity with the Ohio Revised Code. The recommended action is that the Board of Commissioners approves resolution number 20-04-059 as listed above.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And the following vouchers have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure and conformity with the Ohio Revised Code specific to Arborware for the total amount of $956.50. And the recommended action is that the Board of Park Commissioners approves resolution number 20-04-060 as listed above.
Commissioner Berry?
Move approval.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We now come to our...
And just for the record, let's have Dan Morris. He's abstaining.
Thank you. Dan, just for the record, state that.
Okay, got it. Sorry, I didn't mean to say approve.
Say abstain. All right, we move on now to public comments. Do we have someone out in the ether?
No public comments currently appear in Q&A or chat.
Very well, thank you. With that understanding, and we hope those in the public are, again, staying healthy and safe. Next, we move to the information briefing. Brian?
Well, I would normally say with us this morning, we have a guest. We virtually have a guest this morning, Patrick Doran, IT security technician. Patrick joined us back in July of 2019. He is first employed at the Browns IT Help Desk. He has been extremely busy in his support specialist role with us. He has provided a tremendous amount of work in the back of the house from our security systems. And Anthony, if you would like to introduce Patrick, provided this all goes as planned.
Sure, absolutely. Happy to introduce Patrick Doran as our security analyst. So he's our security technician. He's been very busy, especially as remote workers are across the nation. So he's doing well working remotely, but still protecting our network from afar. So Patrick.
Hey, it's nice to meet you all. It's been great so far. I hope to keep you guys happy and safe.
Get this right. You were with the Browns last fall. That season, you're with us this season. I'd say you've met the challenges head on.
Yeah.
Patrick's been a great addition. So thank you and welcome. I will give you a round of applause. There you go. Our next info item is potential projects for accelerated implementation. The team has been busy at work. We are going to be pulling up a presentation. Sean and the entire team have been looking at possibilities along the way. Back in 2009, the infra projects and the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. So there are a host of projects that we are looking at, and Sean is bringing them up, and I will turn it over to Sean McDermott and Sarah.
Okay. As Brian said, we've prepared a pretty large suite of projects that have the potential to be quote unquote shovel ready. I think the definition of shovel ready can probably be looked upon in the eye of the beholder, if you will. But we wanted to walk you through some of those scenarios and potentials that we have here. So knowing that the history of the United States in the response to economic downturns, and we've often seen governments come up with programs to help bolster the economy, looking back in response to the Great Depression and also the Great Recession, you know, we saw WPA and Civilian Conservation Corps efforts in response to the Depression and then to the Great Recession, American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, which also had a part of that as TIGER, which has benefited the park in the years post 2008 downturn. We've identified a host of projects that are in stage of planning and could be turned upon quickly to get two construction documents, or else we already have potential construction documents on the shelf. So what we're calling our list of quote unquote shovel ready projects. And we've broken them into five categories: trail projects, infrastructure projects, projects that have a regional impact, projects specifically at the zoo, and then some partner projects. And I'm not going to dive into the deep details of each one of these. I'm just going to walk you through the basic level of each. Now, the important things about these projects and why we consider them to be in some stage of shovel ready is that we, for the most part, control the land, or we've had productive partnerships that can result in turning these projects rather quickly. The trail projects, and most of these, if not all, fall on our trails matrix that Sarah does such a good job of. But that the projects that we've identified for really geographically diverse. They do a really good job type of our district, and we're really happy with the way this has come together. Now, looking at the trail projects first, and I'm going to go through these quickly, so please jump in if you do have questions. We've got the Mastic Connector. This has been before you before, because we have submitted to the Ohio Department of Natural Resources through their Clean Ohio. Now, we're seeing that Clean Ohio funding for this next round is likely to be challenged because of the budget cuts at the state level. So we want to position the connector project for potential federal funding. And what that does is the bridge is currently under construction right now by Cuyahoga County, which includes a expansion of the deck for the trail. And then we would connect on both the east and west sides to that bridge to get you from Fairview Park down to the valley. About a $1.1 million project. I'd say we're 20 to 30% plans. Hogsback Connector, this is just up the valley, also in Rocky River, where we've had several studies done for several decades showing that the need for access from the neighborhoods via an all-purpose trail down to Hogsback. We also have some geotechnical issues in this area. We can see that with about $2 to $3 million, we can reconstruct the roadway and add an all-purpose from the neighborhoods down and from the valley. Moving to a potential project with partners, we've got this Solon to Chagrin Falls Trail. This was for you some time ago, where we're working with our partners here to both build on an existing right-of-way that is owned by the city of Solon, and then right-of-way that the Metro Parks already owns within Bentleyville. This project, depending on what the scope is, could be anywhere from $6 to $7 million, inclusive of all pieces. The Chagrin River crossing, which we're looking to execute that portion of it, depending on how creative we are with the bridge design, could be anywhere from $300,000 to $1 million to $1 million, depending on the clarity of the design. Euclid Creek Greenway, this is the effort that's been on the books.
Sean, 1 second on that. Were you thinking a suspension bridge is a $300,000 cost potentially?
That's exactly what we're thinking, and taking the model that we developed at Fern Hill and ending that so that we could traverse the Chagrin. That's exactly the thought.
It would be very important to be able to do a bridge with those economics as we move between the South Chagrin and North Chagrin. If we need three bridge crossings, you'll have to do a suspension bridge. And it'd be great to do one right in that geographical area.
Yes. Yeah, we would love to accomplish that. We've actually worked with Cleveland State and their civil engineering department, who used it as a part of their senior project last year. And we've got some pretty creative preliminary designs, so good to see. Euclid Creek Greenway. This is a project that's been on the books for some time to connect the legacy portion of Euclid Creek Reservation to the lakefront portion. We're working right now with Euclid Central Middle School and the Euclid Board of Education. We're finalizing plans there on the forthcoming demolition of the former middle school with the land reverter for the 17 acres. And with that, we'd like to move north with that portion of the Euclid Creek Greenway. And this is a small $250,000 type dollar project if a company were to build it, but depending on what, if any, stimulus package comes out, it could be a nice little filler depending on what is eligible. So on our list, Sagamore Connector. This one is very interesting because it connects Towpath Trail to the Summit Hike and Bike Trail, which then connects to our Bedford All-Purpose Trail, which can take you to South Sugar Reservation. So there's this missing link, if you will. Now you can use some very bike infrastructure road, but we'd like to see a more formalized connector built here. And we are working with our partners at Summit County Metro Parks and have come up with some preliminary designs to make this very important connection. We're looking at probably $1 million for the Metro Parks portion of work, which includes a bridge over Sagamore Creek and then some all-purpose trail along Sagamore Road, and then Summit County Metro Parks and Sagamore Township would work with us to get the trail through the former Ohio Department of Health property that Sagamore Township now owns. Richmond Road Connector, a small project, $375,000, but still very important because it'll help us have that continuance of an all-purpose trail to connect Bedford to South Sugar Creek Reservation. We've attempted several times to fund this through local pilots and haven't been successful yet, but again, we want to position it for shovel ready. Moving on to infrastructure projects, we have Hinckley Dam, which we are under design for. The board approved the design contract maker. So they are in the midst of creating 100% plans. We have a contractor board. It's about $6 million for the dam work, and then some additional funding for the dredging in the lake. But this one, if there was potential for shovel-ready infrastructure, this is it. So we will have it ready. Garfield Pond, and by the way, there's going to be a few projects here that you may be seeing for the first time or haven't seen for some time. Garfield Pond is one of those that we're working internally to develop a plan to bring the pond back to some of its historic grandeur, which is really, it's a wonderful project that already has some funding and sewer district money behind it. So we're working here to prepare plans for stream restoration and to bring the pond back for recreational amenities.
So is that the Washkowitz thing we've talked to Washkowitz about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hawthorne Bridge over road, which is actually I found now owned by Norfolk Southern. This bridge is of our 47 ODOT rated bridges. This is one that we pay very close attention to. It is rated near the bottom of our collection of bridges. And keep in mind, our infrastructure, our bridge infrastructure is in very good shape comparatively to other jurisdictions. So this is about a $1.5 million project. We've already actually developed plans for this. So this could be shovel ready very easily. Heritage Park and Rivergate Boat Docks. This project we've already received about $1.5 million of grant funding against about a $2.1 million project. So this is, there's an opportunity here to kind of leverage that funding with shovel-ready funds, be ready to do it. Moving on to projects of potential regional impact. We're very early in conversations with the Foundry. There's the potential opportunity and a great idea here at East 55th to develop what currently is called the 55th Water Recreation Center, but having the ability to work with a partner, secure funding potentially, and then have a great facility that allows children, neighbors to come down and learn how to utilize and best recreate on the water, be it sailing, stand-up paddleboarding, kayaking, et cetera, and then have educational components here as well. This is about $7 million project in the very infancy of development, but depending on what programs are instituted, we could turn and burn on this very quickly, and this is something that we'll likely back the info item at a later date, but just know that it's in the works and potential.
Sean, can I ask a question on that one? Is it possible that the renovation of the Coast Guard station could be also offered as an alternative for an education center for Foundry? Could that be a request from the city of Cleveland since they're the owner?
I think the answer to that, Dan, we're continuing to negotiate our long-term lease with the city, so that was just a little bit in flux at this point in time. And there's a lot of renovations that have happened. Certainly the water and electric isn't there, but we can definitely try to visit and slash revisit it.
Brian, one other thing, point on this, you know, is as part of any fiscal policy tweak, you know, in response to a recession or a economic turndown, you can divide fiscal policy into things that can be done by construction companies, big stuff. You can also divide them by how much they can help young people. And the WPA was sort of set up that way, and the CCC, where you had the Army running it, but you had certain things that consumed large numbers of people. And if we could qualify these shovel-ready ideas so that we could show how much could be involved with employing younger people who are going to bear the brunt of this turndown, and how much is more related to just conventional construction, that might be helpful for the people that are picking winners in this whole area of fiscal stimulus.
Seems like a good point.
Yep, we can get after that. Absolutely. Thank you for that.
Can I just ask a quick question on this, Sean? What is on that part of the land right now? Is it just open grass, or is there anything where this building's shown?
It is open grass today.
Okay, thanks. Looks cool.
Thank you. And we've internally developed these schemes, and that's one of the I think very big positives of the way we're set up for Shovel Ready, is that we have the staff to turn on these really quickly on most great of these projects. We could do that with our internal skills and a great team. So moving on to Rainforest Primate Edition, the gorilla exhibit expansion, which, you know, we're already underway on phase one with the dome. The rainforest, this is and has, it will be the most valuable in terms of today's dollars project amount, likely in the history of the park and the zoo. So we're looking anywhere to $40 to $50 million all in for a project of this scale. But depending on stimulus comes out, we already are looking at this project in a phased approach. We'll be to you in May with a contract to start the design process. So this one could be also positioned as well, which is really exciting. And then sticking down at the zoo, we're going to walk through a few more and then end on partner projects. Tropical bears, we've come up with some great plans here, and taking on what we learned from Roseburg Tiger Passage and applying it on the side of that area with improvements and complete redevelopment of holding for bears. We're looking at this project to be potentially about $5.5 to $6 million all in, but we could turn very quickly on the construction documents here, being that steps have already been developed. Cheetah, this is a project that for about $750,000 or so, we could vastly expand our cheetah yard and have some great viewing opportunities here. And just like Rhino, we could do most of this design house very quickly. African Elephant Crossing Night Range. This is a project that we've had a little bit on the shelf in working with Chris Kuhar and his team. And this project has the ability to allow for us to have groups undercover overnight which also helps with our breeding program. This is about a $3 million project, and move on expeditiously. And Commissioner Moore, we know you're going to love this one. We are working on plans for a zip line, which is unique in that you could start and finish from the same point, thus not separating small children from their families, on this Soaring Eagle concept, which gives you about 140 feet of fall or so from an elevated tower on the ridge onto a deck at Wade Hall. This would be about $500,000 investment, but the very interesting thing is that it produces revenue nearly immediately. So you get
way to leave the meeting.
So I think it's very clever that you're leaving and coming back from the same point. I think that's terrific. But now, what is the high ground there? Is that where is this?
Right outside of our office, Dan.
Yeah, we're here in the meeting, and there you go. There you go.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's.
We're gonna open the window and send you out it.
That's perfect.
Not if I can't send you first.
Fair enough.
Well put. Touchy, touchy.
And then we'll finish on partner projects, and these are large projects that we have a role in. We are not the lead, but we've got great partnerships on both. And if opportunities present themselves, we can certainly step up and play the role that we're so good at playing as a partner. So with Canal Basin Park, we've got next year the towpath terminating in Canal Basin Park. We've come up with some scenarios to clean and green so that we're not ending people into a parking lot. We've worked with the city of Cleveland on these concepts. And you know, if we want to, we could shoot for something even larger, but for about $750,000, we could make some very large impact on there and getting the parking lots and having a really good setting to further build from at Canal Basin Park. Irishtown Bend, this is a behemoth of a project. Up to 11 partners at times, it seems. And you know, the price tag for what you're looking at here in a picture could be upwards of $90 million if the streets improved and full build out of the concept and vision plan is seen. But right now the port is going through their design of the bulkheads, and that project alone for the stabilization bulkheads could be 30 to 40 million. We'll know more in 2 months. They do have about $27 million of funding already established. And then we as the Metro Parks have about $3.2 million in CMAC funds for the trail along the river's edge, of which we need, we're still looking for the match component of that. So there's lots of potential here, depending how you break out Irishtown Bend.
And Sean, how did the... Who came up with the $27 million, and who would pay for the rest of the bulkhead? How does that work? Is that a Corps of Engineer thing, or
that is an info item to itself, and we can bring back an update on Irishtown Bend. Most of those funds are from INFRA, which is the current federal program, and NOAACA is the sponsor for those funds in partnership with the port, and they're also leveraging some sewer district funds, and then NOAACA is throwing in money themselves.
I got it.
The base trail go into that first phase?
We would follow that first phase for stabilization, and we've got a call with the port, who is in charge of engineering, coming up the end of April for an update on their process.
In other words, the idea would have connectivity after that first phase.
We would try. It's trying to thread it through depending on how the project lays out, but there is funding for certain components. It's just,
but there's a gap.
And we've partnered with the port and others to try to, you know, navigate this, so to speak, in a very, it's a very challenging environment to work in, so.
Okay, thank you.
Great list, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Can I make one?
Just off the top of your head, and I'm first.
But this is to follow up Dan's question before. Off the top of your head, the number of people who would be employed in these, do you have any sense of, would that switch around the priorities? Or you don't know that answer?
The vertical projects, like the grill exhibit and East 55th Water Recreation, those could be upwards of hundreds in terms of full-time equivalents for construction projects. And then Hinckley Dam as well is probably a notable number. Tropical Bears would be a notable number for employment, and then Irishtown Bend as well. But the balance of them being infrastructure and mostly civil horizontal work don't have the impacts that some of the vertical work does.
John, the thing that one of the things that concerns me is that for fiscal policy to work well, it's got to be extremely fast. So right now, you're probably making submittals on this stuff right now, and to have something that requires construction drawings and all of that is complicated. Is there a way that you can do something that are really shovel ready? In other words, stuff like the trail projects would be ones that would be you could do right away for most of the cases. Hinckley Dam, though, that's going to be outside of this particular recession. Won't it take a year to get all the drawings done and all of that?
So that's a
Garfield Pond would be the same thing.
Correct. What we've seen, though, especially with Tiger, it itself was a shovel-ready program when it was first instituted, is that there is still lead-up time that is allowed to get to construction. And we really need to see what the details are of any stimulus, if any stimulus, is approved by Congress. And what we're trying to do here is create a large list, and you know, we can really accelerate things like Hinckley Dam and the trail projects because we've got internal staff that we can turn these things around really quick.
But I mean,
I think to that point, Dan, we're all of these projects that were picked have some level of work already done on them, and so it's a matter of, you know, for lack of a better word, picking you know, the horse that moves forward quicker. I mean, if you remember Hinckley Lake Dam, we've got a contractor on site, so we've already got a lot of these in different stages as they're kind of moving through based on funding, availability, grant sources, and everything else. So it's a matter of being able to have enough levers to pull based on what has the potential, and I like what you said about some of the impact. So all of those things we have to keep trying to balance as we understand, you know, what the program could be for it.
I just wanted to stress, you know, stepping back, you know, the guys that are picking the ponies in fiscal stimulation, the first thing they're going to be doing is what can we do right now? And it's what can we say that as June comes up, people will be having shovels in their hands working. So, you know, just something really quick. And I think if you could go to our congressional group here, you know, including Marcia and the rest, and call our attention to things that could happen right now. In other words, stuff that is more than shovel ready. I mean really shovel ready. I think breaking this thing up so we break it into what the fiscal response through hiring young people, the fiscal response through hiring through big projects that can hire a lot of professional people like the dam and the Garfield, and I guess the bridge would be one like it. But it just the complex thing, the complex ones, and try to divide them up in a way so that the poor federal guy who's looking literally at probably 5,000 projects, and ours needs to jump out more in a more prominent way. And I think to break them up in ways that the government is not necessarily asking for, but we can provide is quite important.
We'll get on it.
Very well. Any more, Sean?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
The next info item is the Slavic Village Downtown Trail Connector Project. Sean and Sarah are both on the line. This is a 3.7 mile all-purpose trail that will connect the Metro Parks Washington Reservation at Fleet Avenue in the Slavic Village neighborhood and extend all the way down to Progressive Field. And it also does come backward into the Sean?
Sarah is going to take this one.
Yep. Good morning, commissioners. I am sorry to share my content. Are you seeing it yet?
Yeah.
No. We're looking at Dan.
We see Dan's beautiful picture this morning.
Dan's looking good.
Happy trail.
It takes a second or two for it to kick over. Yeah. So.
Maybe more than a few seconds.
David, are you there to kick it over to the Slavic Village connector?
Yes, we do have Sarah as the active presenter right now. So Sarah, do you have the screen share function available, and is it allowing you to share content?
It is. I'm clicking on share for the application. Okay. I'm going to try sharing just a screen instead, and we'll see if that works. Are you all seeing anything?
Still just video.
Okay. Let's see.
As an alternative, if Sean has the presentation available, he could run the presentation while you narrate. Give it another minute, though, for you to work that out.
Dave, this is also on the network, if you want to pull it up.
This is Sean. I have it pulled up. If you want to, me to share.
Okay, let's switch over to Sean. That'll be faster. Sean, I'm going to make you the presenter. Sarah, you'll still be able to narrate.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Sean, you should be ready to go.
Okay. Come to me yet?
Dan, sing us a song.
I think we should get maybe into the WPA mode and sing "I've Been Working on the Railroad."
There you go. That'll work.
What are all the words to it, though, Dan?
Everyone knows the words. The caisson song, the artillery song. You all know those songs.
Oh, sure. Long Way to Tipperary, right? That's
Steve, nothing yet.
Okay, I'm passing presenter role over, but it doesn't seem to be
cooperating,
right.
We have it on the notes that were sent out in advance.
Yes, yeah, Sarah, just go ahead and start walking through the project.
Okay. All right. Pulling it up on a separate screen here. All right, so the Slavic Village Downtown Connector Project is one that has been on the books from the city of Cleveland for well over a decade. It started out with a couple of TLCI studies that were sponsored by NOAACA and the city of Cleveland. And this is looking at making a connection between the Slavic Village neighborhood and downtown Cleveland. Is it showing now?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, good. Hold on one second.
That's Sean's share, so Sean can forward the slides while Sarah narrates.
Okay, perfect. All right, Sean, advance, please.
John?
I'm trying my best.
Probably.
Even, even remotely, Sean can hold up a PowerPoint.
It's going to land on you eventually.
This was all a big fix, Sean.
You got a reputation to uphold.
Sarah, I'm sorry.
That is okay. We'll stick with this slide and keep going forward. So the Slavic Village Downtown Connector is about a 3-mile trail that takes you from Slavic Village and starts at the Washington Reservation at the end of the all-purpose trail that is at Washington Reservation. As you know, the Washington Reservation Trail leads down to Ohio and Erie Canal and into the towpath. Right now, the residents of Slavic Village neighborhood cannot access the towpath. There is a Morgana Run Trail that you can see in purple that has been built and is in place, but it's not really connected to anything. So the Slavic Village Downtown Connector would also connect into the Morgana Run Trail and make that facility a little bit more utilized by having that connection point. And you can see on the map here that the salmon colored line that it skipped ahead. There was a preceding slide here that showed just the trail, but the salmon colored line here is the Slavic Village Downtown Connector. And there is a section that is complete in that part of the phase one of the project that was completed by ODOT as part of the Innerbelt construction. And so a section of it has been built. There are two phases, phase one, phase two. And Cleveland Metro Parks is very interested in this trail just because of the access that it provides, and it serves sort of as a complement to the towpath trail on the west side of the river and giving people on the east side of the river the same access. You can see here that there has been significant investment in projects. Many of these have the roadway components that are mixed in, like the Opportunity Corridor and Lakefront West that have those numbers so high. That's not all for the trails. But there's a gap in investment on this side of the river. Okay, please advance. A little bit of lag time.
Sorry.
So the interest too, like I was saying, is in making that connection for the okay. Are you seeing anything on the screen?
Same map as before.
Okay. My connection is not showing that. Sean, can you advance past that slide?
Yeah, I'm on the next slide on the downtown connector slide, which shows sections closer in Islamic Village.